just feel it. Yeah, you talk to him. Shout out to the Dadcast Nation. Yo, see, this is the perspective of a dadcast. Whomever's interested, come take this ride with your boy, and I promise to keep it interesting. I'm invested in learning life's lessons so we can grow together. I know the weather be switching up on you, but listen up. It's just life's journeys. This would turn me into a teacher, a father, a husband, a preacher, and I'm trying to reach the top. A writer, an author, an actor, and a director. So when you see the world through my eyes, it's like a reflector of all of that. And I'm all of that, but it's much more to do. See, life is just your movie, and your role is yours to choose. We only get one life to live, and I live my life with prayer. This the Dadcast Podcast, so hit that like and share. Hit that like and share. That like and share.
Hey folks, welcome to the Dadcast Podcast. I'm your host, Lavelle Lemonnier, and hey, this episode is unlike any other we've done in the entire previous five seasons, and so far in season six. We're going to talk about some real things, some important things, a greatly important person, and we're going to hit on some things that are really going to hit us at the core, but that's okay. Before we get into that, I want to say thank you to my wife, Dr. Gabrielle Lemonnier, for being the co-creator and helping me with the content for the Dadcast Podcast. I definitely couldn't do it without her. To our supporters and our partners and sponsors, thank you for believing in what we're doing with the Dadcast Podcast and for putting your resources on the table to help this go out to the masses. And for you, Dadcast Nation, we couldn't even have a podcast without you. So thank you from all the countries that are represented in the Dadcast Nation and all of the great cities across the U.S. Thank you for tuning in again, for watching every week, for being a faithful follower. Now make sure you subscribe to that YouTube channel. Go there, hit the subscribe button so you can get all of the information that we have available on all of the episodes. On Instagram, you can subscribe now on Instagram. If you become a subscriber on Instagram, you're going to be privy to a lot of behind the scenes information. This is the first time we're trying this. It's only $2.99 a month. That is going to help us produce these episodes. It's the bare minimum that they would allow me to do on Instagram, but I'll make sure to get some good information, some inside information to you as a subscriber. I'll respond to you directly, and if you send me questions or you send me ideas, I'm going to literally sit down, pay attention to them, and respond to you specifically as a subscriber, because you're important to what we do. Without further ado, we're going to get right into our episode. Right after this break, we'll be back with our guest, and get ready. This is going to be probably life-changing to you. Thank you.
looking at something else. I wanted really badly to believe that. And I've had to now deal with yet another stigma, which is drug use. Listen, to feel the things that we feel is to be human. To feel so hopeless that you need to self-medicate. Yeah, you may have feelings about it, but it is a human thing to do. Humans sometimes don't do the right thing by them, by the ones they love. It doesn't make them less human. But again, I feel like, in spite of all our efforts, we live in a society that so harshly and so quickly judges people who are hurting, that Jaxie did not feel able to bring this to us. I don't blame Jaxie for that. I'm trying not to blame myself for that. But this is where we are. You know, we're losing kids at an ever accelerating rate to fentanyl and synthetic opioids.
Right. As a matter of fact, I think the last statistic I saw as of 2022, there was nearly 74,000 deaths due to fentanyl and synthetic opioids, which is, that's a whole city.
And you know something? Yeah. We don't even know if those are good numbers. I'm in the process of trying to build out an infrastructure to dig out more timely, more accurate information so we not only know those aggregate numbers, how many, but when they're happening, where they're happening, and to whom. Here are a few things we do know. Okay. Of all of the pills being sold on the illicit market, back in about 2018-19, that number was maybe 6 out of 10 being fentanyl or carfentanil or whatever. As of right now, as of 2021, that number is bumped up to 7 out of 10 pills. There is data out there suggesting we are getting at 8 out of 10 now. How long before you can virtually guarantee that every perk that you buy on the street, every bag of Coke, anything you can imagine, is at least tainted in some way with fentanyl,
right,
or similar opioids. I don't want to get too tied up in fentanyl because fentanyl is the enemy right now, but that evolves over time. Now here's another number that I know: 2 milligrams.
Can be lethal.
2 milligrams is like just a few grains of sand. If your system is not prepared for it, that's enough to kill you. That's enough to kill an adult human. 2 milligrams. There's graphics out there. I won't bother showing you yet another. Do the homework. 2 milligrams can kill you. This is more potent and more lethal than rat poison to human beings. It's also being sold, by and large, as something else. I'm telling you right now, it was not the case for us. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. In fact, it does. And I got into a really vocal discussion with our LADA, George Gascon, in a meeting several weeks ago about this. I won't even get into all the details, but their belief is that, officially, I guess, they think that most people who end up dying from fentanyl were looking for it and were drug users. I'm telling you, we fell into that category, but I'm going to ask you this. If you're a dealer and you are selling fentanyl on the up and up as such, why the hell are you pressing it into Percocets or Xanax or any number of other things? Why are you passing it off as something else?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take a genius to know that there is intent here. There is a design here. And you better assume that what you're looking at has fentanyl rather than take your chances and pay the price. Okay? These numbers just keep going up. And one of the things that we're trying to do is find the magic combination of resources to be able to gather these statistics and present them so that we can understand who this is affecting and at what rate, so that any organization trying to fight this fentanyl and illicit opioid crisis has the right tools to do so. I wish I had thought to do this years ago, but this is where I am, and this is why I'm doing this.
Let me ask you this, just because we probably have, you know, viewers from all different types of backgrounds, two-parent homes, single-parent homes, abuse in the background, and wholesome Wiley Beaver homes. You know, every scenario you could think of. But as a parent, and specifically as a father, we're all fathers here, and we try to be protectors, and we try to be, a voice of reason at times. We try to be a sounding board at times. We try to be a disciplinarian at times. But you're the only one here that can speak to the point of when you can't be those things. How would you tell somebody who's watching that can't be all those things that they want to be as a father to a child, but they haven't experienced the loss that you have? What kind of guidance or advice or encouragement would you tell that person who is saying, I'm at my wit's end, I don't know what else to do, I'm just here, I need help? I think nobody can speak to that better than you.
It's I don't know that I can either, but I look at it this way. Emotionally speaking, if you are in a relationship with somebody you're worried about, I think there's nothing more powerful than to never let them question or ever forget just what they mean to you. Your life matters. You're my child. You're my whatever. I love you and you matter to me. And this is what my world would be like without you. There are enough people like me out here who could show you what that pain looks like. I have no desire to see anybody else go through that. So, first of all, being present, being interested, and expressing your deep desire for the well-being of your loved one is the single best thing that you could do. The other thing is to be clear-eyed and real about what's going on and what's out there. We knew. We were in some risk groups, right? A number of them. We knew because we lived this every day. It was an emotional roller coaster. It was very difficult. Trying to be good parents to a kid that doesn't necessarily follow the owner's manual, right? We had to figure it out as we went. Even we chose to follow with our hearts, to lead with our hearts and make whatever mistakes we make through love. Did we do everything right? Probably not. One thing I think I wish that we could do over is to be more deeply aware of the risks, the threats out there, specifically in our case, fentanyl, but really all the things that lead us to it and just how freely available it is. This was found over social media. Well, social media, as I have since learned, is built in such a way to basically reward predatory behavior. If you follow the news, Snap is being sued, Meta is right behind them. In our case, it was Meta, Instagram. Dealers, sex traffickers are using these tools to track down potential victims and have their way. We need to be more aware and more effective in making sure our kids understand just what's out there and what the threats to them are. And it's hard to know this without having seen it. Mm-hmm. But I wish I could have told Jax, hey, this fentanyl is bad stuff. And everything has it now. It is everywhere. That's my message to people now. Assume you're taking, you're at a friend's house. You have a headache. You need some for your headache. They give you some aspirin. Assume that aspirin is tainted and assume your friend doesn't know. Because there's a growing number of cases of exactly that happening. Or you're an athlete and you're hurting. I have friends who lost their kids for taking a Percocet or an Oxy. That was not a Percocet or Oxy, or not strictly so. Healthy, confident young people killed in one shot. This is what's out there. And I think if you have that talk with your kids and you're consistent in warning them of the risks and just how much of a risk it is, not only to them, but to you. I don't think that can possibly hurt, you know? Things I wish I had done more of. But there's always going to be something.
Right. Let's take a seat and have a little more conversation. While we're switching the scene, I do want to say to Melvin, Richard, who might be watching this, that I don't have answers. I just, you know, I have a guy like Matt who's been in your shoes, who's in your shoes. And man, all I can do is say I'm here with you, trying to fight with you. Matt, the guy that I'm speaking about, his son Juice was murdered. Basically, he's in the court system right now, going through the legal battle to have the dealer prosecuted.
We're in the same boat. I just had a conversation with the DA's office yesterday. You would not believe the dysfunctionality of our system. How between law enforcement and the district attorney side, the two seem to be competing against each other, not working together, not communicating very well. I feel for your friend, and I encourage him to reach out. We might have a lot to talk about. I'm on a mission to make sure these people are doing their job and are keeping honest. I just found out yesterday that a bit of knowledge that I know I personally handed to the LA Sheriff's Department, for whatever reason, did not seem to be in the awareness of the DA's office. And that information was this person was dealing fentanyl knowingly, verifiably, to Jax well before they turned 18. Mm. I also informed them, seemingly for the first time, what law enforcement told me that this person was known to be doing, and the only reason they did not have another homicide on their record was that they or somebody happened to be on site with naloxone at the time, which is the counter agent for fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
So by dumb luck, my point is, this person knew damn well what they were doing. They knew they were dealing to a minor. They knew they were dealing something that was knowingly harmful or fatal. None of this information is hidden knowledge. It's well known. So my question is, why the hell, a year down the road, is this person still walking free and probably still dealing?
Right.
Now I have the DA who's interested in murder too, because they feel, given what I've told them, in the state of California, this is something that could be prosecuted as such. And let me tell you, from everything I understand of it, anything less than that results in a slap on the wrist, a few months, because the jails are too filled up. But implied malice is the phrase they use in law enforcement. If there is reason to believe there was implied malice, in other words, if they knew that what they were dealing was this dangerous, it's tantamount to if you're drunk and you get behind the wheel of a car, you know what you're doing is dangerous even though you're drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That is implied malice. You're doing something knowing the dangers. So this person was not only doing that, but doing that to a minor. Now, how much do you want to bet that this was not the only minor? So meanwhile, DA is telling me one thing. Sheriff's Department doesn't even want to talk to them because they're saying the DA doesn't want to prosecute this properly. They want to bring it down to involuntary. I have no interest in that. So it's going the federal route, and it's wait and see. I'm hopeful that sooner or later we will see some justice. Do I think it's going to make a big difference? No. Do I wish for this dealer to basically lose their life, either by imprisonment or other means? No. It's not going to change anything for me. It's not going to satisfy me. What's done is done. This person is a user as well, as I understand.
Mm.
They're also a human being who has pain and issues. Do I think there should be a price to pay? Yes. I also think that price may very well save that person's life. And I can only hope, maybe on the other end, have them become something other than a problem, maybe part of the solution. That I can live with. I'm sorry if I've gotten off the beaten path.
No, these things are, and guys, as you're watching this, Dadcast Nation, there's a number on the screen that you can call, and I'm not a big fan, to be honest with you, with crisis lines, but it's a starting point. You have this number on the screen. You can call, seek help. But I think the thing I'm learning from Matt, more importantly than anything else, is that the inner circle that you can influence, you've got to put your stamp on it. You've got to put an imprint on your inner circle that says, we're safe, we're trustworthy, and whatever you're dealing with, just put it on the table and let us figure it out together. Don't hold it in. You know, my daughter, and she gave me permission to mention this, deals with anxiety and depression. And I'm so proud of her because she sought on her own to seek therapy for it. And we talk about it. And as a dad, it's so emotional because I worry all the time that it can turn into something, or she turns to somebody that she shouldn't turn to. So I try to communicate with her all the time and let her know, you know, whatever it is, I'm always going to be your dad, and I'm always going to love you, and there's no expiration on that.
Amen.
And I think that's the thing I want to talk about, especially for men that are watching this. We bottle up our emotions so much sometimes, and we're not honest with ourselves when we are overwhelmed by pressure. We have pressure of trying to take care of families and provide for families and be macho and be masculine and be just men, the stereotypical version of a man. And society has crafted a thing that tells us we can't even cry. We can't say we love you to other men. That's not right. I think that's exactly right. I think that we have to express ourselves. We have to understand that we are emotional beings as men, and identify the pressures in our life and address them. And sometimes you got to sit and talk with other men, like I'm doing with Matt, to realize that we, regardless of where we come from and socioeconomic backgrounds and whatever the case might be, we all need somebody. And that somebody could be in the form of Matt, it could be in the form of me, it could be the most unlikely person you can find, but you got to reach out and you got to be a part of a circle that helps you.
You also have to own the solution yourself. You have to be the change you want to see. And that means opening yourself up, admitting that you have needs, and taking the risk of being available and open to other people's needs. I'm finding that in this journey, the only way I could feel healing and purpose and honor for my Jacks is to do that. To be a voice, to be a sympathetic ear, to remind others that they matter, and to save somebody else this gloom and this sadness. Because I guarantee if you're a tough guy and you never cry, you got kids and you lose one the way we did, I guarantee you'll spend a lot of time seeing the flip side of that, the hard way. And to share them and to open your heart to the risk of whatever you think might be coming, whatever pain or ridicule might be coming, it's nothing compared to the loss you'll feel going through what we've gone through. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Losing a child is unlike any other loss you can imagine. Only those who have lost understand that loss. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. So the best thing you could do is kind of own those feelings, be there for others, and give. Give something of yourself, your time, your care, the little things. You know, affirm and validate one another, your kids, your friends, strangers. It's not a zero-sum game. You actually have more to gain from that kind of generosity than any other thing that you could be doing.
I'm looking at Jack's pictures, and when I see their smile, it reminds me of just, I want you to tell me what made Jack's laugh.
Well, Jack's had a great sense of humor. They found everything funny. I mean, I'll tell you what, all my kids have this gift of the dad joke, you know, even though none of them are boys. Jaxie was just right up there. I mean,
Oh my gosh. We had so many inside jokes, and to be able to laugh in the moment about something, mm-hmm. was something that we shared, and I really, really miss. But even more than that, this joy you see is, it comes from a place of really deep love for such a young person. More than the sense of humor and the fun, there was this nurturing side. You know, I've got a little prop over here I want to show you. It's a symbol. This is Bunny, the famous Bunny. And so this was something of, well, not the original, although it looks like it could be. Oh, forgive me. Probably the DA. You could edit that out. So,
if you need to stop and take it, you...
No, it's all right. So Bunny was Jax's favorite stuffed animal from when they were very, very young. I would say 4 or 5 years old. Mm. We got this at a Borders bookstore. Turned out to be exclusive to them, and we learned this the hard way. So you'll see pictures of Jax holding this throughout our family albums. You'll see Jax holding a bunny up here. So yeah, bunnies, cats, everything. Just, they loved every animal imaginable. One day we were on vacation in Hawaii, and Jaxie left Bunny behind. I don't know, it was at a park or something. And we drove away. Jaxie realized this, and they were still pretty young. Full blown panic. Bunny, I need Bunny. So we had to go back and search, extended search. I think we did find Bunny again. And like, right? Sometime later, back home, Jaxie had Bunny at the park, the neighborhood park this time, and left it there. Again, panic, drop everything, search for Bunny, right? I mean, we're crying, right? Well, this time, Bunny must have found a new home, or maybe came to life and hopped away or something like that, or that's what we told Jax at the time. They were not buying it. By that time, Borders bookstores was becoming kind of a thing of the past. So, needless to say, finding these things, not easy. Oh, the search was on. I had to look everywhere. What few Borders were still around, toy shops, whatever. Ended up finding one on eBay. Mm. So, Bunny 2.0. I want to say that one was lost too. All right. This is Jax clinging to this silly little bunny and getting caught up and weaving it like most kids do. But this was like something that they could never give up, get over. So we bought another one. And so now we found more than one over time, having been lost, but we eventually ended up having two. So there would always be Bunny 1 and Bunny 2. And this was Bunny 1. This is the oldest one we have. And up to the day we lost Jax, this was on their bed. Mm. This had a prominent place because this kid was so loving. And even at 18, was just kind of an innocent soul who, which is so unconditionally kind and empathetic. Animals love them. They stood up for older people when they saw something wrong. They'd make us stop on the side of the road if there was a duckling struggling to cross. We ran across a duckling with a broken leg on a very busy road where we live, stopping traffic. Well, we had to get out. There was no choice. We had to get out. We had to take care of that duckling. The duckling was basically given up by its mother for whatever reason. This is something that they do. There were no other choices. It was a Saturday or Sunday night. There was absolutely no place where we could take it, right? So we had to bring it home. That's it, Jaxie said, and that's the way it is. We had to go hunting the next morning, it must have been Saturday night, to find an emergency vet. Well, they couldn't take it. They don't really do birds or ducks there, and they recommended a place, so we had to take it to, I think, the animal shelter. But Jaxie would not let us rest until that duckling was seen to. I know I hijacked here. For me, Jaxie was much less about the laughs and stuff, although there were plenty, but it was just, it just always came back to stopping everything if something or someone was in need. This kid was a beautiful old soul. Even weeks before we lost Jax, barely a month, I remember Jaxie brought home a friend that we had not met before, who, a boy who had been thrown out of the house. He was, I think, 16, 17 years old, who had just come out to his parents. Parents didn't understand. Their first instinct was to basically disown him. It was extra hard for him, I would say, because in our neighborhood, he would stand out a little bit. A gay black kid in a neighborhood that there are not a lot of gay kids or black kids, to be honest with you. Meant nothing to Jax. We have a room. Hell, they didn't even ask me. They didn't ask Mom. It was just like, yeah, we got a room. Well, they knew us well enough that we would have said okay anyway. You know, if there's a kid in need, we always encourage that. But this is Jax, you know, a feeling, empathetic, generous, kind person. Well, there was a happy ending to this story. So the boy spent the night, you know, downstairs and talked to his parents the next day, and they took him back. They realized the error of their ways.
Good.
So it all was okay, and you know, that was Jaxie for you, making things right for anybody they could. This is what we lost, man. It's a kid who knew that they were different. And by default, saw not how other people were different, but how other people are the same first. And had a heart as big as a house. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing, you know. I learned so much from Professor Jax there about life, about kindness, about generosity of one's heart. And I believe that if more people could exercise that side of themselves, this world would not be such a screwed up place.
Yeah.
And for those that are watching, I'm listening to Matt and doing inventory on myself. Like I think we all should do, because whether we want to publicly acknowledge it or not, We all have inherent biases that form the way we navigate this life we're in. The racial biases that we have, the biases that come along with classism, the biases that come along with genderism, all of those biases that we have in our mind frame the way we approach the life we live. And a lot of times, for me at least, I can't speak for those of you that are watching, but for me at least, when I meet somebody like you who has brought into the world an amazing person like Jax, it makes me want to reassess my position and go against what is sometimes natural to me to have a bias one way or the other. Because, and I'm just telling you guys that are watching, like, I grew up with parents from the deep south who were born in the 20s, and if they saw somebody that looked remotely, and oddly enough, my dad looked much like Matt, blue eyes, the whole nine, but he would see someone like Matt and would classify him as evil right off the bat. That was passed down to me, and it wasn't until I entered the military that I realized that there are good people in every race and bad people in every race. And I can only imagine if I would have met Jax that I would have just fallen in love with that soul.
No question.
But I tell you what, I feel like I'm meeting Jax through you, and I want to thank you for that, because just hearing the story of Jax and the pain that you suffer, but the plight that you're on to make this world a better place in spite of that pain is so amazing. It's I don't even think commendable is the right word. It's just,
it's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, if you're paying attention to anything throughout life, is you are presented with choices. There's a fork in the road everywhere you go. No matter what happens to you, no matter where you are. The one thing you have a choice about is what you're going to do about it. How you act on the things that you assume are right. Are you going to question it? Are you going to allow yourself the vulnerability of admitting that maybe you're wrong? Maybe your biases are just that. And I don't know, maybe we should all start by asking ourselves, what do I have to gain by sticking to these beliefs, sticking to these biases? And what am I risking if I question them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it makes us any less to admit that we're wrong. I think it makes us more. I don't think it makes us any weaker to show vulnerability and to take the risk of extending love and kindness to people. I also don't think that love and kindness is or should ever be regarded as a zero-sum game. By that I mean somebody wins and somebody loses. My kids, not just Jax, but my surviving kids have taught me so much about how much we can gain by letting go of some parts of ourselves that are just dead weight. I mean biases, I mean pride, I mean always needing to be right. Especially as guys, you know, we're supposed to have this authority about us and this confidence about us, but a funny thing about authority and confidence, I think the most powerful expression of authority and confidence is in allowing your shield to come down, to allow yourself to be vulnerable, to cry when you're sad, to acknowledge your feelings, that you have them, and that you care about those of others. We want that kind of thing to live in others. Why not in ourselves? You have power. Jaxie flexed that power naturally. My daughters flex that power naturally, and I'm very proud of them for that. Mostly because of my wife, because she's awesome. And I'm learning, kicking and screaming, trying to be better. That is the only moral high ground I could ever claim, that I'm trying. That I'm trying to be better. That I'm trying to do something that's not just for me. It isn't about me. It's about us. It's about our kids. It's about the world that we've brought them into, that we're still here and have some small power to continue to shape for them. And in the tools that we equip them with by choice to continue in that effort. I wish I understood the depths of these lessons much sooner than I have. I'm still learning. But I feel like maybe if I fully embraced and fully understood this, we might not be having this conversation at all. What happened may not have happened at all. To some extent, that's on me. I have to live with that. But I still have two kids and a wife that I love more than anything in the world. And it's in service to them and to others so that nobody has to go through this, that I do this.
Dadcast Nation, you've been watching this, and maybe you haven't lost a child. I hope you haven't, and you haven't. Maybe you haven't ever experienced the kind of pain that we've talked about today, but you can still get involved. You don't have to be in Matt's seat to get involved. Help us fight this fentanyl epidemic, this opioid epidemic, and whatever else is out there. Get involved. Just get involved. I'm going to have some contact information up for Matt. If you want to encourage him, you want to reach out, you have questions, reach out to him. Send us comments at the Dadcast Podcast. You can reach us at dadcastcomments@gmail.com. And if I don't have the answers, I'll get the resources out to you to try to point you in the right direction. But what I want to say more than anything else is to just get involved. Help us spread awareness. Help us get the word out. Melvin, again, I want to say to you, man, we love you. We're standing with you. We look for justice, for juice, and for all of those out there that have been impacted by fentanyl and by other drugs and opioids. But I'm a better person for having met Matt, for having heard about Jax. And I wish you could feel what we're feeling in this room, because it's a real emotion that changes me. It's going to change you, I hope. And men, it's the last thing I want to say. Men, you can still be a man and be vulnerable. You can still love those in your life and tell them you love them. Because you'll be surprised what I love you means coming from you, a man, to somebody else. Whether it's your brother, your son, your friend. Yes, you can tell your friend, your male friends, that you love them. It's okay. Just be open to change. Matt, I just want to thank you. Your story is inspiring, but more than that, it's changing. It's life-changing. And I'm so glad that you let us into, you let our cameras, you let me get a little piece of Jack from, and share them with the world. And I'll do my best to help you honor their legacy. Wherever I can help to fight this fight, I'll be there, if it's just to share the light on something. And hopefully this, you know, I'm going to consider you a friend moving forward.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lavelle.
All right. Thank you.
I do appreciate what you're trying to do here, and I'm honored to be a part of this. To be a man, to be a strong man, doesn't mean being hard. Hard things break.
That's true.
Soft things bend, and then bend back. It's not a weakness to be soft. Not always. Just be real. Be kind. Show empathy and understanding. When you lead with that, you can't go wrong. Not everything will go right, but you won't be a part of that. Just be part of what's right. Do the right thing. Anyway, again, I really am grateful for the opportunity, and anything that I could do to help anybody else, whether in my shoes or not. You have my information. Please feel free to relay it.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt, again. Dadcast Nation, this is a different season. Season 6 is all about men and emotions and dealing with things from a male perspective specifically. But we're coming. We'll be back. Information will be on the screen. At the end of this episode, you'll have a whole screen of information for you. Again, feel free to reach out to Matt, myself, and we'll respond. Thank you for watching. As I always say, peace and blessings.
Thank you.
Just feel it. Yeah, you talk to him. Shout out to the Dadcast Nation. Yo, see, this is the perspective of a Dadcast. It to whomever's interested. Right. Come take this ride with your boy, and I promise to keep it interesting. I'm invested in learning life's lessons so we can grow together. I know the weather be switching up on you, but listen up. It's just life's journeys. This would turn me into a teacher, a father, a husband, a preacher. And I'm trying to reach the top, a writer, an author, an actor, and a director. So when you see the world through my eyes, it's like a reflector of all of that. And I'm all of that, but it's much more to do. See, life is just your movie, and your role is yours to choose. We only get one life to live, and I live my life with prayer. This the Dadcast Podcast, so hit that like and share. 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 Yeah, hit that like and share.